Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
We now have, as president, a professed Catholic who, in his personal piety, seems quite sincere, but who facilitates grave moral evils.
If he can walk away, I can walk away. So abortion is unfortunately the walk away for women who have been abandoned and not treated in the way that God meant for husbands to treat their wives.
Our opinions we should hold very loosely and always be ready to repent of, but the Lord's word we should boast of and be proud of and be sure.
If somebody profaned my name, I would want a bit of vengeance. But the Lord doesn't go that way because that would be contrary to his name.
Washington University in St. Louis students who are quarantined because of the COVID virus love listening to sound Lutheran theology from Issues Etc. while studying German. Ich liebe Probleme und so weiter.
Religious liberty is very important. We talk about it a lot here on Issues Etc. Frequent topic of conversation. But arguments for religious liberty don't cover everything, and they don't go as far as they need to when we're in public debates about the very nature of human sexuality, the family, our relationships to our children, whether or not there's such a thing as male and female, the defense of the unborn. There are other truths that can be marshaled alongside the argument for religious liberty in these subjects that can stand on their own and might make more compelling arguments in the public square for our positions. And Christians do not need to concede that our positions on any of these are mere religious opinions or just religious truths. They actually are truths, self-standing, self-reliant truths in and of themselves. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 4th of February. Dr. Ryan Anderson, author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled Religious Liberty Isn't Enough, will join us to talk about taking arguments beyond religious liberty. We'll spend some time with Dr. Kevin Golden, part 4 of our series on the sacred names of God today, the authority of God's name. We'll be back into our series on the New Testament manuscripts with Dr. Craig Evans, talking about the sexual Jesus in some of ancient and not so ancient manuscripts that surround the New Testament. And then we'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. comment line, the email address talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about taking arguments beyond religious liberty, Dr. Ryan Anderson. He's president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas. He's founder and editor of The Public Discourse and author of several books, including Truth Overruled and When Harry Became Sally, and a recent column for The Wall Street Journal titled Religious Liberty Isn't Enough. Dr. Anderson, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, religious liberty is important, and it will be under assault during the Biden administration. Why should we avoid the temptation to make it our go-to argument against President Biden's agenda for our country?
Because so much of what President Biden will be doing will threaten other values that we do care about and that we should care about. Religious liberty is something that we care about, but it's not the only thing that we care about. And so what I mentioned in the op-ed is just, you know, a rough handful of things. We also care about marriage. We also care about unborn babies. We also care about privacy. We care about safety. We care about equality. And many of those things, whether it's, you know, privacy of a woman's only facility, whether it's safety at a battered women's shelter, whether it's equality when it comes to athletic competition and all of the challenges that transgender policies pose, those aren't primarily about religious liberty. And so we do a disservice if we only respond to the religious liberty challenges when we have so many other challenges that we also care about.
Take us through your reasoning using some examples of President Biden's move to overturn perhaps the Mexico City policy and the plan to end the Hyde Amendment.
Sure. I mean, so the first thing to say there is that why do we care about the Mexico City policy and the Hyde Amendment? And, you know, one thing you could say is that, you know, our concern there is that we don't want taxpayers to fund abortion because that would violate their conscience, that would violate their religious beliefs. But we can take the question a step further. Why would it violate taxpayers' conscience and religious beliefs? Because it would kill children. And that's the, you know, when you get to the bedrock root concern, what are we most concerned about here? It's about the children that will be killed, unjustly killed. It makes it worse that they're being unjustly killed with taxpayer money, and so that's one reason to be opposed to it. But ultimately, what we really want to get to is a situation in which no children are being killed, whether they're being killed with private money or public money, whether it's government taxpayer funding or whether it's big corporate funding. The ultimate goal here, we have to remember, is a world in which no child experiences lethal violence in the womb. And so again, phrasing it as primarily a religious liberty concern can obscure the deeper concern, and we have to keep those deeper concerns at the forefront.
How do conservatives push back against the president's gender ideology without immediately appealing to religious liberty?
Sure. I mean, here you just, you know, take a lesson from some of the, you know, self-identified radical feminists, many of whom don't identify as religious. Some of them do, but many of them don't. And they just say, look, biology isn't bigotry. They take the body seriously. Part of, for them, what being a radical feminist means is that men and women are different in important ways, and we should recognize and celebrate those differences. And it doesn't require any sort of revealed teaching or supernatural faith to know that we're created male and female. You know, biology can show us that we're male and female. Biology might not be able to get us to the created part, but it can at least get to our natures as male and female. And then it just takes, you know, basic common sense to think through, well, why do we have separate bathrooms or locker rooms or sports teams? What's the underlying purpose of that policy? And so this is how I think we should be framing this. We should not be framing it primarily in the first instance as a matter of theology, as a matter of, you know, revelation from, you know, the book of Genesis or something like that. In the first instance, we should be saying that the Democrats are waging a war on science. They're the ones that are science deniers when they deny the reality of our male and female embodiment and the ways in which our embodiment matters. Right? These are differences that make a difference.
How should we frame our arguments? You had mentioned sports teams. How should we frame our arguments regarding the requirements for men and boys to be allowed into women's and girls' sports?
Sure. I mean, this just highlights why it's not a religious liberty battle. Is it only religious girls who want to be losing track competitions to boys who identify as girls? Or do the secular girls also have an interest in fair athletic competition? Right? I mean, this is where we can form alliances with people who might not share our underlying theological convictions, but who say all girls deserve a fair playing field. They deserve a level playing field. The arguments here are going to be sometimes best embodied visually, in the same way that sometimes an ultrasound image, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, and an ultrasound image and some of the 3D ultrasounds have converted more people to the pro-life causes than, you know, some of the best scholarship that, you know, people like me could ever produce. Just watch some of the competitions where it's very obvious that there's a boy who identifies as a girl who is just kind of smoking the rest of the competition on the track field. There's an MMA fight in which it was a male identifying as a female who broke the eye socket of his female competitor. It doesn't take any particular faith. It doesn't take any kind of particular political conservatism to see that this is unfair.
What is the advantage of this approach when engaging the left?
The advantage here is precisely that you can bring people on the left into your coalition. So it's not just right against left, but it's center, right, and left against left. One of the events back when I was at the Heritage Foundation that I hosted was titled Hands Across the Aisle. And it was two women from the left, two women from the right. And they were reaching across the aisle to say, we disagree about a lot, but we agree about biology. And we agree about the importance of not denying biology. Another one of the events that I had, all four of the speakers were from the political left. So I actually think the advantage of this is that you can build a bigger coalition. I think it's important that faith communities, in particular theological traditions, speak in their own voice to their own communities and that we don't lose that distinctive voice. But there will also be times when we want to form alliances, form coalitions. And I think there's actually a very good opportunity here on some of the extreme transgender agenda that is coming out of the Biden administration to form alliances with people who probably don't agree with us on much else.
You mentioned this in addressing the issue of the Mexico City policy and the Hyde Amendment, but go into a little more detail. Can we present a compelling argument against abortion without appealing to religious truths?
I think so. And here's one thought that listeners could consider. Is it only religious people who announce that they're expecting a child by posting an ultrasound image to their Facebook page? I have lots of secular friends who the way that they do a baby announcement is posting the 20-week ultrasound on Facebook, on Twitter. They send it in an email. They put it on Instagram. Many of us now have for, you know, the baby books that we might have for our children or our grandchildren, the first picture of the baby is the ultrasound. And then all you have to go from there is say, okay, well, what is it that makes it wrong to kill you? What is it that gives you value today, gives you worth today, gives you a right to life today? And in what meaningful way are you different than when you were in the womb? Right? There's nothing magical about the birth canal. There's nothing magical about birth. It's also interesting to see that, you know, people who do gender reveals, you know, sometimes they do this when they get the 20-week ultrasound, which suggests that they know that sex isn't assigned at birth and it's not assigned at ultrasound. It's a reality that can be discerned on an ultrasound screen image, can be discerned at birth. I think those are some of the ways in which, whether it's the abortion or the sex assigned at birth nonsense, that we can be engaging with people, again, who don't necessarily share our conviction that we're made in the image and likeness of God. But whatever it is that gives us worth and value, ask them, why doesn't the unborn child have that worth and value?
Dr. Ryan Anderson is our guest. He's author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled Religious Liberty Isn't Enough. We're talking about taking arguments beyond religious liberty. Should Christians pretend to be agnostic about the truth of their perspectives? We'll find out next.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
In the days of King Josiah the high priest brought out the book of the law and read it in the presence of the king. With newly awakened faith, he restored the people of Israel to the worship of the one true God. So also this month's issue of the Lutheran Witness encourages you to return to the Word. Return to the Word in your prayer. Return to the Word in your daily devotions. Return to the Word that you hear preached and proclaimed from the pulpit. You can read this and more in your issue of the Lutheran Witness. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Ryan Anderson, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, about taking arguments beyond religious liberty. Dr. Anderson, you say that we shouldn't pretend to be agnostic about the truth of our perspective. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So what I mean by that is that you will see that sometimes when we have to litigate cases in the courtroom, the official public law that we have on religious liberty says that it doesn't matter whether your religious belief is true or false, right? So whether you keep kosher or not, whether you abstain from meat on Fridays or not, should ultimately be irrelevant when a court of law is considering your beliefs. And so lawyers will argue when they're litigating a case for the Little Sisters of the Poor or for Hobby Lobby, and they don't need to prove that what the Little Sisters of the Poor or the Green family, the owners of Hobby Lobby, believe about abortion is true or not. And that might be true in the courtroom. But the rest of us don't need to pretend that what the Little Sisters of the Poor believe about abortion or what the Greens believe about abortion isn't true. Because the religious liberty claims are going to go better when the underlying beliefs that are being under assault are defended on the merits. Right? So it's not just I have a right to be wrong or even bigots have rights. It's that my belief isn't wrong in the first place. My belief isn't bigoted in the first place. What I believe is true, it's good, it's beautiful. You're on much stronger cultural footing when you're defending the merits of your beliefs, the substance of your beliefs, and not just a procedural right to kind of hold your beliefs in private.
So how should the legal arguments proceed for religious liberty?
Well, I mean, the legal arguments should proceed according to whatever the legal statute is. So, whether you're litigating under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or whether you're litigating under the First Amendment, whether you're litigating under state law, the lawyers should be making the best arguments they can on behalf of their clients, given the court of law in which their case is being heard. And so sometimes that means, back when Anthony Kennedy was on the court, you had to make a legal argument that could get his vote, because to count to five, which is what you needed to win a Supreme Court case back then, you needed his vote. And so the lawyers need to make strategic arguments that are in the best interest of their clients. My counsel to the rest of us, we don't have to speak like lawyers. And I think one of the lessons to be learned from the Obama years was that sometimes it seemed as if everyone was talking like a lawyer, and there weren't enough people talking like theologians, talking like philosophers, talking like social scientists. And we need those voices to be authentic within their own traditions, right? We need the theologians not to speak like lawyers. We need them to speak like theologians.
You also remind us that in the culture wars, conservatives aren't the aggressors. What do you mean by that?
Oh, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. It's not conservatives who gave up on the right to life for children and declared just manufactured a constitutional right to kill a child up through the moment of birth. It's not conservatives who redefined marriage. It's not conservatives who started harassing evangelical bakers or shutting down Catholic adoption agencies or now, redefining what sex is and then making girls compete against boys. Each and every one of those aggressive actions in the culture war came from the left. Now, it's an oddity of our media environment that only conservatives are called culture warriors, right? They use culture war and culture warriors as a slur against conservatives. You never see, a liberal nominee to a court or to an administration position described as a culture warrior. But you'll see conservatives described that way, right? But it's not as if we're the ones waging an offensive war, right? The culture war came to us, and now the question is, will or will we not defend the truth about the culture? And I think there's a temptation here for some people to say, I don't want to be a culture war. I don't want to be. And we have, I think, no choice but to defend the truth, to bear witness to the truth.
Why won't a strategy that's based on religious liberty alone work in the long run?
The simplest analogy to draw there is to racists. And rightly so. People who have an odious underlying viewpoint are not treated particularly well in our culture or by our laws. If biblical truths and natural realities about the human person, that we're made in the image and likeness of God and that we're created male and female, are successfully redefined as if they are bigoted, then we will be treated in culture and in law the same way that other bigots are treated. And that, to my mind, is why the religious liberty alone approach isn't the right one. We have to defend both religious liberty and those two truths in particular that I just mentioned, the human dignity made in the image and likeness of God truth and the sexual complementarity created male and female truth. Those are the two truths that are most under attack right now. Actually, and then the third truth would be, and that we're created for each other, male and female, right? The reason that we're created male and female is precisely to then unite as one flesh in marriage. Those three truths strike me as the most controversial, the most under assault today. They're the center of many of our religious liberty debates, and to be successful at the religious liberty debates, we also need to be successful at defending the underlying viewpoint.
Finally, how would you respond to someone who says your strategy may be successful on individual issues related to religious liberty, but it may put religious liberty itself at risk?
Well, I don't see how that could be the case, because part of religious liberty has to include the liberty of religious believers to fully advocate for their truth claims in the public square. And so if we're saying that the cost of defending religious liberty is that we have to go silent about advocating for our truths in the public square, then that seems to turn the entire concept upside down. Right? So part of religious liberty is not just to be left alone in the corner of my chapel to do my own thing, but it's to be a full member of society, fully engaged in the civic process, and not a second-class citizen. And so if the cost of even engaging in the religious liberty discussion is accepting your status as a second-class citizen, then it strikes me that the entire project is misguided from the start.
Dr. Ryan Anderson is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, and author of several books, including Truth Overruled and When Harry Became Sally, and a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled Religious Liberty Isn't Enough. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. Anderson, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll discuss the authorized use of God's name in our series on the sacred names of God with Dr. Kevin Golden next. How can Christians engage the culture on topics like science, politics, depression, sexuality, personhood, and more? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith That Engages the Culture. It's written by regular guest Dr. Alfonso Espinosa. Faith That Engages the Culture is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Faith That Engages the Culture.
Jesus said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit sidadvocatesforlife.com. sidadvocatesforlife.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you looking to use your Thrivent funds to beautify your church? Never fear. Ad Crucem has the solution. See our liturgical banners, baptismal or confirmation certificates, gifts, Christ-focused greeting cards, and posters. Alternatively, stock up on a set of Christmons or Christmas ornaments. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Hi, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Are you an investor looking to support the bold and loving work of LCMS churches? Is your church or organization ready to do bold and loving work? This year, we have a ripe opportunity to bring Christ to a hurting world. Discover the role you can play in this great work. Call 800-843-5233 or visit lcef.org. That's 800-843-5233, lcef.org.